Well, my name is Thomas George Reynolds. I was born at 1:50 on the 10th of October, 1:50 a.m. on the 10th of October 1904. Makes me 86 at the moment.
Well, I'm Mel Ferguson, and Melvin, but I'm always known as Mel, and I was born at Lithgow in 1921. That's quite some years after you was born, Tom.
But about 17, am I?
Yes, you've quicker calculating brain than I have. It's probably quicker than these kids too. And I lived in Lithgow, and during the war, I went to school there, of course. In fact, I lived in the house I was born in the day I was married. But I lived in Lithgow, and when the war broke out, I went to work in the munition factory to make Bren guns for our boys. And while I was there, I met my husband, Tim Ferguson, who had come from this area, the Newcastle area. He lived at what was Young Walls End then. And he had come to work in the munition factory for the war effort. And I met him there. I used to have to scrap any work that wasn't up to scratch because we weren't very popular with the machinists, so I happened to be a viewer or an examiner. And any components he made that weren't up to scratch, well, we scrapped them. And of course they would say, they're all right, and we'd say, no, one of our boys might get that particular component in a gun, and if it didn't go off, it could cost him and a lot of other mates his life. But anyhow, we all worked very well there together. There was about 500 people in the section I was in, and that was only a Bren one, which was only one little part of it. But the men and women worked very well there together. The women were well respected by the men. And I worked there until 1944, and I got married. And I came up to, I lived in Rose Bay while my husband was still in the services until 1945. And he got home on Boxing Day in 1945. And we lived at Young Walls End for 18 months because it was very hard to, we had already bought a house, but the tenants couldn't get into the home that they had bought, and there were 7 moves. That's how much of a shortage of homes there were in those days. And eventually, after 18 months and a 6-month-old daughter, we moved into West Walls End. We've lived here ever since.
And when did you move here?
Well, I was born in William Street, Holmesville, in 1904, as I said, to Jane and Arthur Reynolds. Dad was a brickmaker. We've been over to England, and we found the family goes back to 1635 as brickmakers. They opened up, grandfather and my father and another uncle opened up a brickyard near the West Walls End Cemetery. And the bricks in the post office over here, some of our bricks. It's the only ones that we know of at the present time. Anyway, I was born in William Street, and I grew up as a lad partly over near the brickyard in the bush over there. A little bit of a place before Maffick in those days, you might know it, so they could look after the brickyard. Then in 1909, the old age pension came in. Of course, grandfather, no money in bricks. All they got around there, a few, they sold most of their bricks. These kiddies won't believe it. So they sold most of their bricks for 18 shillings, which is $1.80 for 1,000. On the day, they were about $600 for the same sort of bricks. So it was starvation, you see. So, of course, everything around here mostly built out of wood. Well, because wood was cheap. Even back in the Depression days, they've got down as low as 12 and 6 and 100 super feet. That's if the boys know what a super foot is, which is 12 by 12 by 1. That's a super foot. Today it's worked in cubic measurement feet. So anyway, Dad, to make a living, my grandfather came out from town. They'd been living in a batch over there. They used to walk home on a Saturday night to Waratah through the bush, walk back Sunday night with clean clothes and a little bit of food, start work on Monday morning, work all the 6 days, go back home there. Sometimes in a month they might make £3 and divide up amongst the three of them. This is how good those days were. Grandfather around Westport and built a lot of these chimneys, supplied the bricks, the scaffolding and the mortar, and built a trick, built a chimney, a £2 tin, which is $5, or up to £3 tin, depending on the height. So a £3 tin for a chimney, they get round about £40 for it now, $400.
Did you actually work in the brick factory? With
no, I was only 5 years old when they gave it up, see. His dad had a garden and a fruit run. So after, I think, somewhere between 18 months and 2 years, I shifted to Humphrey into Earl Street. They had a shop there. And Dad had been taking vegetables around. He started to take fruit that round, see. Now, those days, he used to go to Newcastle with £5. And that would get him enough fruit to do him a week. £5, he'd sell it. He'd sell it at about threepence or fourpence a dozen, you see. The same thing we only got to now $1. $1 each some of things, lose yourself a penny. These things are hard to believe, aren't they? But even up till after the war, I worked at the glassworks, which I'll come back to in a moment, for £7 a week. As a fitter. So now those same wages are getting somewhere around about $400 to $600 a week. But it takes all that to live on just the same as it did those days.
We're no better off, really, or very little better off.
We didn't have so many things, that was
no,
all.
No, that's right.
It was
Now, at any rate, I grew up at the Barnsley School until I was 13. At that particular time, we had 6 cows and a little dairy. And being only mother and myself, there's the 2 milkers in the place. The rest of the kids couldn't do it, and Dad couldn't do it. So I had to knock off school. I passed the QC and went to Westmore Skin, stopped there for a month. Mum brought me home, and of course, I had to stop there for 6 weeks and I wouldn't go back to school. I'm not going back amongst all the 6 weeks, 7 weeks behind the rest of them. We had Mr. Putland, who eventually became an inspector of schools, passed the education test himself and became one of the big men in his son. So he was our teacher at the time. Well, then there's no work. You either go for a pit if you get a job. So Dad had a cart and horse. So I started to pick up wood in the bush and sell it. And coal. So I did that job until I was... in the meantime, while I was doing it, we bought a yard dray. The yard dray is one of those small tip drays, just held a, we called it the yard because the hill it was packed up, held about a cubic yard of soil or stone, see? So it's called a yard dray. So I worked as casual work on the council while I did the other job. I had more money than Dad did, I bet. He went there in 1916, when the first war was on, there was no money about. The pits weren't working. There was no coal. Those days, the pit only worked when the whistle blew along. You understand what I mean? At half past 3 in the afternoon, Killy Pit blew a long whistle, the next day it was work. If it wasn't a long whistle, no work. CM number 1 up here blew at the same time, half past 3. Westy blew at 4 o'clock. CM where I worked at later on was blew at 3 o'clock. So if the whistle blew, then you went to work next day. If it didn't blow, you didn't go to work. There's no work.
Well, when did you know to go back to work?
You waited till the whistle blew.
So you could hear the whistle all around.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
The whistle.
Oh, yes.
It passed around like like a black fella's speech stick or whatever you call it, smoke signal. Everybody got out in the street to wait for it. Sometimes they were working a week, you know. I remember my wife, which I wrote the story, but didn't put her name to it. She came up from school one day and said, "Mum, I want a pencil." So Mum said, "I've got no money." She said, "It's only a penny." Mum said, "I haven't got a penny."
There was just no money at all.
Could I put it on the bill? No, you can't put it on the bill because I can't pay for it.
No. I can remember I was only a small girl in the dull days, were in those days, but there was no money. It was only you got a voucher which entitled you for so much food for each member of the family. You know, you everything was rationed, but you only got it in by giving this voucher. And when that cut out, well, that was it. You had all your food. It wasn't worth money. It was only worth food, which was precious in those days. And I can remember the Salvation Army, the same as they do today, came around with their box on the Sunday morning, and my mother, we all knew there hadn't been a penny come into the house for quite a long, I couldn't say how long, but for quite a long time there was no work. And but we knew there was a shilling sitting on the clock. We had one of those big old-fashioned clocks, and just on the ledge of the clock was a shilling. And I remember my mother going to the door, and her face went red because she thought, oh, I haven't got anything to put in the box, because most people, even people that had a bit of money, put a penny or a halfpenny in, which now would take, three pennies was worth 2 cents. But people in those days, a penny or a halfpenny, which was half of that, and the farthing was half of that again, but they would put those coins in the box. There was very seldom anybody financial enough to put a silver coin in, like a threepence or a sixpence. But anyway, my mother stood at the door, and I knew what was going through her mind. I was only a child, but I did know what was going through her mind, because she felt so embarrassed that she didn't have something to put in the box. And she was a great one for helping other people, although she had 11 children of her own. And anyway, she said, "Just a minute, lady." She said, "Just a minute." And she went out, and we all, our mouths dropped. We opened our mouths because Mum reached up and took this shilling, which had been there. Well, I suppose we'd had it for a while, but it, as she said, it wouldn't pay what she owed, and it wouldn't buy enough for a family of 11. And, you know, there was 13 in the house, and always a few more too that were a bit worse off than us. And you know, it wouldn't buy enough for that, but she said, "You might be able to do more with it than I can." And she dropped the shilling in the box. And the lady that was standing at the door, she nearly fainted, because nobody ever gave a shilling. You know, that was a lot of money.
Well, how did you survive with 11 children in the house?
Well, you was given food according to the number of children. And actually, I've often heard my mother say that somebody with a family, like, you sort of shared. So you managed better than a young couple with only one child, because they had such a little bit to, you know, like in a family there's big eaters and small eaters, and it sort of levelled out that way, that we didn't go hungry. We many a time had bread with dripping on it, where the butter, we couldn't buy butter, but you could have got twice as much dripping as butter for your voucher, so you got dripping. And we'd have dripping on our toast and pepper and salt on it, but we loved it. You know, we did. We really loved it. It was, you acquired a taste for it, and you just got that you really liked it. Or you'd put a bit of fat in a pan and you'd fry the bread, put pepper and salt on, and you'd make a meal of that. It was really, you know, I can still taste it.
It was the same with having a drink. We used to get a spoonful of sugar, a glass of water, and a tiny drop of vinegar, stir it up.
Yes, that's right. Yes. Yes.
No, anyway, we're telling you too much.
No, you can ask a question.
How was your family affected by the Depression?
Well, we always had a garden. My grandmother, she comes from Suffolk, and I've been around Suffolk and Norfolk and Lincolnshire in England, and it's just one big garden. You've got no idea what this country is. more like Chinamen.
Yes, right? Yes.
There were no fences around, still isn't.
No.
Right from Suffolk, Norfolk, where the Queen's house is up there.
Yeah.
I've been inside that too.
Yes.
Right up to Lincolnshire, I suppose 50 miles, and it's nothing but vegetables and flowers. There was more tulips growing in England than there is in Holland. Mm. Far more.
Yes.
And better looking too. And that's saying something. But at any rate, we always had a garden. When Grandfather came out here, after they just finished walking backwards and forwards from Waratah, they took up the piece of land right at the bottom end of George Street. I eventually got part of it and I sold it later on. So we had 3 acres of land. So we were never short of vegetables. So we lived on vegetables. Well, you see, those days, the butcher's cart, the baker's cart, the grocer's cart, the fisher, the rabbit-o, the man selling tea, the Chinaman selling clothes, they all come around,
all
didn't they?
All came to the house.
All came to the house.
Yes.
I can remember Mum getting half a pound of steak day after day.
Yes,
and that did 6 or 7
yes,
people.
Yes.
Half a pound of steak.
Mm. Well, I can remember.
We're going too long?
No, we've got 10 minutes to go.
Oh, have we?
We had a butcher at the end of it. In fact, it was a co-op store, the same as we had in this area until a few years back. But we used, our meat was nearly, Mum used buy the bones and make soup. Well, you got them for practically nothing, you know.
Yeah.
And we always had a big pot of soup on the stove because it's cold weather in Lithgow for about 9 months of the year, and the other 3 months can be very, very hot because it's a very dry heat. And Mum would always have a big boiler of soup because we had a big open fire, and you had big iron kettle on one side and the big pot of soup on the other. And it didn't matter who came in, you could take a ladle of soup and have a cup of soup, you know. And we used to grow our own vegetable, and we also had a few chooks and ducks, which Mum used, you know, rear her own chickens, and that was our pleasure. You know, to go down, oh, there's a new batch of chicks coming out, and you'd be down, there's another one picking the shell, Mum, they're coming out, you know, and that was...
I don't suppose after kids see a chicken
come
out of a shell today.
But, that was the highlights of our life. You know, we'd come home from school, and you'd go down to feed the chooks, as you'd say. We all had our chores. And then later on, one of Mum's sisters had a dairy, and they let us take a young heifer, and then we milked the cow. And we used, you know, like anybody who, if we had more milk than we could use, we helped those who were less fortunate than us. But actually, well, we were all very healthy because we didn't have anything extravagant or anything, but we had good food, really good.
Well, it was unknown in this town anyway. It was unknown extravagance. I mean, there were a few people. Now, this building here, which is the one originally here, was pulled down. It belongs to Joneses. Joneses, that's what they call the Drapery Palace here. They had 3 sons that never got married. Reuben, Hyvan, and Leslie. Old Jones used to go to the Presbyterian Church. He was one of the elders there. And my dad used to deliver wood to him. And every now and again, they'd send home half a bag of old clothes.
Yes.
And of course, then the clothes were picked down. Trousers were made for us.
All things were recycled. You know, you unpicked and washed the material and pressed it, and then you started to cut out. And all our boys, I had 5 brothers and 5 sisters, and all their pants were made out of the best part of men's pants everything.
Overcoat.
You didn't know what. I think I had left school before I knew what it was to have a new frock on. And I was invited to a party, and I can remember, no, it was just before I left school, because I remember coming in from school and my mother had bought, often a Syrian lady that used to come around with a big, she had a big, it was like a big black sheet, and she'd just come to the door, and then she'd undo the 4 corners and she'd open it out, and there'd be everything in it, from cottons and needles and materials and linen, and everything would be in this shape. Anyhow, my mother had picked out this frock for me to wear to this birthday party I was invited to, and I never forgot it, and I can remember exactly how that frock was made, and it because it was the first new article I remembered having. And you know, you really appreciate them, because but I used to be thrilled. There was a lass lived two doors from me, and she was about 2 years older than me, and every year I got her cast offs, and I thought I was the best dressed girl in Lithgow because I got Gladys's clothes. So I was, you know, I was really, oh, I used to be, it was a great thrill to come home and find that she'd been over, and you know, she, you don't mind having them, do you? You know, and she always was well dressed, so I was very fortunate.
All their clothes would pass on to somebody else.
Well, then you passed them on, because I had four young sisters, but mine were passed
down. Well, when the sisters grew too big, they sent them to the neighbour, somebody else.
Oh, you did. You passed,
nobody came round and picked them up.
Well, they went around a few cousins before my young sisters got them, really, because I had three brothers between myself and the four young girls. So they went around cousins, and then they came back. Everybody looked after. The same with baby
clothes. You
wouldn't
believe it today.
Baby clothes and everything. You didn't waste anything. You washed it and put it away nicely.
The trousers got a hole in it. They put a patch in it. It wasn't always the same colour, mind either.
You used to wear patches like that in the seat of your trousers. My mother used to sit and she'd be having, there'd be patches. They used to be done from the centre seam, and they'd be just that shape, like a big heart in the seat of the pants.
Yes.
And the
socks are all knitted. People used to knock you up.
Oh, yes.
I learned to knit a sock myself.
Oh, yes. You didn't go and buy anything like
that.
Well, you didn't buy much at all, because you didn't have money. You didn't have money to spend, you know, until times got a bit better.
Everybody had a garden.
Yes.
There was more grapes growing up here than there was in Pocholden today.
Yes, everybody.
Grapes,
yes,
and quinces.
That's right, yes.
You know, it's
got
anything up to get a dollar for a quince today.
Oh, my word.
They used to grow around the creeks here.
Oh, yes, you could always go out and pick fruit even that were growing in the paddocks. You know, people probably owned the land and had orchards there years previous, but they were really, you know, they were just abandoned. And then you could always go with a sugar bag and pick enough apples or pears up around there.
You know what a sugar bag is, do you?
Yes, made of hessian.
Mostly made in Indonesia, though, in Java those days.
Yes.
So what was sort of the thing that sticks out in your mind of the Depression?
Well, I got married on the 24th of December, 1927. We were married, and the work got bad. I'd gone to the mine as a lampman. The electric lamps and the oil lamps, so the miners that used them down there, see. My dad and my uncle worked there, and George Snedd, you remember, married one of the Gustardis?
Yes.
George was on the lamp cabin, he left it.
Yeah.
And the manager came on and said, we'd have to advertise for a man who can do these lamps and do so and so and so and so.
Yeah.
And my uncle said, I've got the man picked out for you. Who is it? I said, my nephew, Arthur's boy. What does he know about it? He said, he knows as much as I know about it. Where did he learn it? He said, he learned it here. Who gave him permission to come in here? He said, I did. I'm in the boss of the place. You get the shilling a day more than the rest, see?
Yeah.
At that particular time, I was working with a dray who was building a new shaft at Blue Gum. Now, if you go down the road going to Curry, and you get to the little bridge at the bottom, if you come back about 50 yards probably, there's a road running off to your right. There's a big concrete business there. It's only just as far as early as they're off the road. It's still sitting up above the ground about that height. That was the shaft we built. It was closed in just after that because old John Brown died. And they started to use that line over there. They weren't allowed to those days. So we got married on that date, and I'd had good work for 2 years. I'd saved £150 up, which bought all our furniture at the time. So it was the way where we come back, we had £10. Never forget it. £10. And the pit went bad. And it went bad then for 15 months, and then the lockout came. They all went on strike, so they wanted to take 10% reduction. So we were out for 15 months. During that 15 months, sometimes once a month, we would get 30 shillings. But we lived on the garden.
Yes.
I was married living up in Bridge Street, and old Ab Dumbrell, and then Dumbrell Spring Works down here.
Yes.
Old Ab, he's a blacksmith, old pit up there, they started that Spring Works. He came over to my place one day and he said, listen, would you give me a bunch of cowslips, a bunch of roses? He had nothing to eat, there's no vegetables in his garden. So he gave him a bunch of carrots and said, cook things with it. Anyway, that's what we lived on until we went back to work. I had a job then from June 1930 until 35. 34 I was cabled out at the pit. And during that time, 1 year we'd worked three shifts on the pit work for 1 year. I got a shift every fortnight looking after the lamps inside there. 15 allotments I brought up. So we used to get 15 allotments a fortnight. That's a dollar, roughly 60. A dollar 60 to live on for a fortnight. We lived on it too. You don't know how, now you look back and you just laugh and scratch your head. So that's how we started off. Anyway, since then, well then, during the war years, before that time, we got cabled out in 45, and I got in with Cashel's Amalgamated, all these firms, and I never got out of work anymore.
No.
I went insurance, and I went into real estate, and really home. I've been around the world three times now.
I say, you was fortunate because there were bad years right up to the war years, wasn't there?
To the war years, then I was put into the glassworks as a fitter.
Yeah.
We had about 7 months time to go, is it? Had about 7 months training at the tech, and the time's up. At the tech, we were still over there, and then they put me at the glassworks. While I was there during the wartime, so making these here bulbs and tubes, we made the machine that made some of these tubes.
So, was your work affected at all by the war? Like, did you have to actually, how did you feel?
It didn't affect me. Well, it did. I was working for Cashel's Amalgamated, and the Japs came into it, and they immediately rationed petrol. And of course, I was working in town, so we never had enough to drive the car in. In the meantime, I was called back to the pit as a spare lampman. And they put me fettling on the line, and I'd been used to selling ladies' clothes and all that type of things.
Yes.
My hands are the softest. Worse than they are now.
I'll tell you how the war affected me. I was working in the small arms factory, and as I told you, that's where I met my husband. And of course, he left there. He was only there for 12 months. And he left and joined the Air Force. And he'd been away for 18 months, and he got a few weeks' leave. He'd been up in Darwin, Bougainville, and up in Tymore, and all those places. And anyhow, when he got home, well, he thought we might get married, but I thought, no, I don't want to be a wartime bride. I thought that until the day he was leaving, and then I thought I should have married him after all. So I decided that I would marry him on his next leave. So I went back to the factory, and he went back. He had to go back again, and he rang one night and he said, I've got leave for the 26th of August. So we made preparations for the wedding. We had about a month to make preparation for the wedding. So we had everything ready, and as his people lived up in Newcastle and my people lived at Lithgow, and it was even hard to get seats on trains to travel from one place to another. And then with our big family, we couldn't accommodate the whole of their family, and they would all want to come. So to save so much travelling, we decided to be married in Sydney. So we'd booked the St Mary's Cathedral, and we'd booked the cars and the flowers, and I had to do all this myself because Jim was away. And on the 24th of August, I got a phone call. All leave's been cancelled. We're to go on, there's no embarkation leave. So I had left the small arms factory. They'd given me a lovely send-off. And a little, everybody threw in and gave me a little gift, you know, a wedding present and a send-off. And we'd had a great time at lunch, in our lunch time, you know, and had a bit of a sing-song. And that happened on the Thursday. I was taking the Friday off to travel to Sydney, so I was being married from my brother's home in Sydney. And I was taking the Friday off. And it was on the Friday night that I got the phone call to say that the wedding was off. So Monday, I was not able to really leave officially. I had to go back to the small arms factory with my marriage lines to prove that I was married before I could get a clearance. You couldn't leave. You couldn't please yourself where you worked or what you did. You had, so I had to go back. And so when I went back, I was being married on the Saturday, and they were going to give me, Jim had to be back in camp, he only had a few days, and he had to leave again on the Wednesday, so I had promised I would go back with my marriage lines on the Thursday, like after he had gone, and they would give me my clearance. But I had to go back on the Monday. And of course, they all think there was I waiting at the church. And I had all that to put up with. But anyway, that's how it affected me. And it wasn't embarkation. His embarkation leave, he got compassionate leave on the 31st of October of that same year. So that's the day we were married.
Ah, well, I was born on the 10th of October.
That was just a little episode that I'll never forget.
Yes, I suppose you won't. Yes, well, anyway, I've got a knock off.
Yes.
So I went through the depression for 7 years, practically nothing. Even went up into Queensland working on a dairy farm, my wife and I, for £1 a week. The two of us working £1 a week on food. Amongst goannas, death adders, emus, kangaroos, wallabies, a whole lot were up there.
That's something a lot of people lived on too, was rabbits. My brothers
millions
were rabbit trapping and that sort of thing. And you went and trapped rabbits and then you sold the skins, like for the boys if they wanted to. It was a bit hard for, I had two brothers older than me who were teenagers. And they wanted the, because every Friday night you went for a walk up the street. That was late shopping night. And of course, everybody owned a navy suit except our boys. So they
wouldn't buy one either because when you get a kid and you've got a shawl, you're picking the hairs off the thing for weeks.
Yeah, anyhow, they went rabbit trapping to try and get clothes that their parents couldn't buy because there was no work for young boys either. They used to just go and they filled their time in quite well enough. You went and helped garden and you went to your aunties and did all kinds of jobs for them. And, you know, they were never idle, really. Never just sat on their bottoms and did nothing. They always found something to do.
Rabbit-o used to come. It used to be nightmares to buy a rabbit. He'd skin it there while you waited. Chop his head off and legs off.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Yes. So I'll just have your names again, just so I can write it down.
Melvin Ferguson.
How do you spell it? I just want to make sure.
MELVA. Yeah. FER. GUSON.
My Nan is a Ferguson too.
You know
how my Nan's a Ferguson too?
Oh, is
she?
And Thomas George. Reynolds, Reynolds.
My name was Delaney before I was married. Just not, I'll give them the Delaney. D-E-L-A-N-E-Y.
Well, thank you very much for that.